We are back after a 2-week hiatus here on the show, and wow, has a lot happened in a 2-week span. We go over some milestones that have happened over the last couple weeks and some things that, well, aren't happening, at least for the next few days. It is episode 112 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Welcome back here to the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast and a 2-week hiatus here of the show on this Tuesday, December the 21st edition. Kyle Gamard here, your host as always. I just want to say thank you again to, you know, being patient and the fact that there was no episode last week. I physically was unable to do it, let alone for 40, 45, 50 minutes straight. The voice could not handle it, but voice is better now. And it's the Christmas break, holiday break for some. Some of you are obviously working a little bit as well. So lots to cover in this 2-week span, as you heard a lot earlier. There are some milestones that were hit that we need to touch on. There were some things as well that, well, aren't happening, which is kind of what we'll kick things off with today. So I do appreciate you being patient and waiting in, and we'll get to as much as we can today as possible. Follow along on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can go to anchor.com, which is where I share all of our content. We're streaming across 8 different platforms, and then you can follow along on social media on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. We'll go over a lot. I want to talk about one thing. Games aren't really being played. That's what we'll kick off with, and we'll touch that. But, you know, I want to talk about one player in particular with the Toronto Maple Leafs and a guy who has really taken the mantle as of late. Marc-Andre Fleury news, World Junior Hockey Championships, the Winnipeg Jets and their head coaching situation, the Vancouver Canucks and their head coaching situation. But unfortunately, we're going to be starting with this. The NHL and the NHLPA have agreed to pause the 2021-22 season from December 22nd to December 25th. This news broke yesterday. The way it'll work is teams must suspend all operations and will not practice or be tested during these days. Facilities will reopen on December 26th, that is Boxing Day, at 2 p.m. local time. Today's games between the Caps and Flyers and Lightning and Golden Knights will apparently go on as scheduled pending test results. But then after today's games, no games for the next 3 days or 4 days. There were already no games scheduled on the 26th, which a hefty 14-game schedule is going to be ready to go on the 27th. Already some teams were postponing games, including the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Florida Panthers. Nashville was among those teams as well. And the teams and the cases were kind of ramping up. I think the Canucks were in there. And I would say roughly, I think double digit teams were getting to the point of they were just going to shut games down through Christmas. And now the NHL has decided, you know what? 22nd to 25th, go be home with your families. Players are being entered into the protocol right now, unfortunately. The pause is basically the league's latest attempt at halting the spread with, like I mentioned, just a multitude of players and teams getting caught in the virus. And if you've probably noticed going on your feeds and just hearing from people, it is spreading a lot faster. I don't think it's necessarily as deadly, but I think it is being spread around like wildfire right now with people going to visit places and going to going back to their families and friends. And I think this is just probably a good idea. In all honesty, I'm not going to talk about this whole much, frankly, due to the fact that it sucks. And along with this news, it sounds like NHL players are not going to Beijing for the Olympics. Within a 2-week frame, basically, the last time I did this podcast, it went from who's going to be Canada's extra players and which players are going to headline the United States and is Jack Eichel going to be ready enough in time to go? Will Canada be able to get Mitch Marner back when he comes back from injury because he was put on LTIR a couple weeks ago and looks like he'll only be really missing a week worth of games? To NHL players aren't going for the second consecutive Olympic run, which really sucks for players who had never played there before. Like, these are two golden opportunities. Like, we all talk about how Sidney Crosby has achieved everything he's wanted to achieve. right? He's won junior championships. He's won, you know, the world juniors. He's won the world championships. He's won an Olympic gold and he's won a Stanley Cup and God knows how many individual awards. And Connor McDavid, there's now 2 years. Maybe you could just say one, but let's just say two different opportunities for him now to not go represent his country. And Austin Matthews won't have a chance to go represent his country. And good, young players who don't have the chance to go put their skill on display and allow this sport to grow. And this time it had nothing to do with the league and the IIHF talking about health insurance or money. You know, unfortunately, this time it is a global pandemic that has rightfully scared a lot of people, a lot of players, organizations, their families, their friends. You know, and now we're going to be sitting here for the second straight Olympics with no NHL players going. And there is a lot of very, very good young talent. Players maybe looking to play in their final Olympics. If you remember from 2010 or 2014, you know, guys getting a chance to play in their final Olympic games. Guys like Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry who were able to give it one more go and get themselves a gold medal before, you know, probably not being invited to go back. Well, now, you know, even Joe Thornton, you know, those turn of players now are going to be, you know, the likes of maybe Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron. You know, older guys who have strong held their positions as part of the organizations. I'm not saying he would have made it, but, you know, a guy like Jonathan Toews, with everything that he's gone through. You know, 4 years ago, the last Olympics, where there was a fight between the IIHF and the NHL, you know, Jonathan Toews would have been on that team. But he didn't get to go. Now he's not going this year. And, you know, he might lose that spot, one, because of talent, two, because of age, because there's so many other good young players coming up. And in 4 years' time, guys are being drafted. We don't know what mark they're going to make on the league. And it not only sucks for the players, it sucks for the world to not see the best of the best going and representing our country. And quite frankly, the sport that ends on the final day for a reason, it is the sport that is incredibly well watched and might be one of the bigger attractions. And that's not taking away from any other of the sports that go on at the Olympics, but you know, it's tough. And the league can pause for a few days and everything's fine, but a lot of guys are missing out on an opportunity to go play for their country. And you know, there are some players who would have opted out anyways. There are some players who would have done literally anything for it. Guys like Alexander Ovechkin, who have never been able to win a gold medal for their country, have now been robbed of not one, but two opportunities to go do so. One, due to the fight back and forth, and now, unfortunately, due to a global pandemic. So, league looks like it's going to get going again as of the 27th, and if there is a positive note to take from it, the time frame in February where players would have gone to the Olympics, where the NHL was on a break, that's going to be the time where it looks like the league is going to try and make up the games due to COVID, so the league isn't really going to have to lose or expand their timeline a little bit for the season, and they can go during that frame. But you know, it's breaking out right now because this is cold and flu season. This is when people travel. This is when people go see their families. It's when it's cold outside. It's rainy. It's the time of year where more people just naturally get sick, despite what you do. Despite precautions that you might take, it just happens. You know, I'm normally one of the healthier people, and around the Christmas time is normally when I get sick. It just happens. There's nothing I can do about it. I even take more precautions during this time of year, just in case. It still ends up happening. It's the time of year, and unfortunately, this is just the virus that we are so consumed by and have been consumed by now for the last 2 years. Two plus years that it's taking effect, and it's the right call to not have players going, but still doesn't mean it sucks, right? So we'll have to wait another 4 years to see Connor McDavid, or we can all cheer for Connor McDavid and not cheer against him anytime he plays against our teams. So Let's move on here. Let's talk about the next story. And, you know, sometimes in life, you got to know when to call it quits. Like, you got to know when to walk away when you're on top. Now, there are a lot of individuals who stay a little bit past their prime. And that's, it's totally fine. It's hard to walk away. Guys like Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, called it a career. It's brilliant. It's genius. You know, Paul Maurice knew he had lost the locker room of the Winnipeg Jets. He'd been the coach there for some time now. He's been a coach in the league for some time now. Took over as the Jets head coach in 2014, 7 years. Been part of 600 games, 315, 223, and 62 record, 5 postseason appearances. He's 6th in NHL history with 775 wins. Broke into the league back in 1995. But he knew he'd lost the room. And this past Friday, he resigned as head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. They're 13-10-5 on the season. Assistant coach Dave Lowry is going to be taking over his duties for the time being. But he had a press conference on Friday. And he said it was his decision to step down. He said, quote, "This is a good team. I said, I'm a good coach. But sometimes you can only push so far. Sometimes the team needs a new voice. They haven't quit on me, but they need a different voice. It's the right time for it. And I know that. So I love these guys. I love this place. I know it, that it's time. And that's a good thing for the Jets. It's also a really, really good thing for me." Now, he signed a 3-year extension back in 2020, sorry. So would have he paid him till 2023. But, you know, it's the sign of a good coach and a good individual when they know that they've kind of reached the end of their run. And they don't try to grasp for more. They don't try to latch on or extend things past their prime or past when they were expired. You know, Paul Maurice has noticed that the team is a lot better than maybe it actually is showing in the record books. And there's not a whole lot that he's doing. Now, players like Nikolaj Ehlers have come out and said, "I cannot thank that man enough for what he has done for me and this team." Mark Scheifele spoke out. Blake Wheeler spoke out saying not only of a great coach he was, but a great man that he was. And listen, is it going to pay off for this team? I don't know. It's always a good message. It's a good way to light a fire. It's similar to when you're in a game and it's not the goalie's fault, but you pull him. You know, he gives up 3 goals on 14 shots, 3 unstoppable goals, but you're getting outshot 14-5. And you got 8 minutes to go in the first period and you are getting slaughtered. It's not on the goalie. You know, sometimes the team just needs a wake-up call. So when they see their starting goaltender who they've hung out to dry for 3 goals on 14 shots, gives the team a wake-up call. And Paul Maurice here stepping away is trying to give this team a wake-up call. Now, I've watched the Jets play, actually. I've watched them a few games. They played the Leafs when they've played other Canadian teams. I've watched highlights of them. They don't look bad. But they're inconsistent. They're inconsistent for a team that allegedly has a top 5 goalie in the world. I don't believe that, but a lot of people do. A lot of people have had him in MVP voting. And he's a great goalie. He's a top 10 goalie. But I just don't consider him a top 5 guy. I don't know why. Something about, I think it just has to do with the fact that it's overhyped. Like, I've heard so many people talk about Connor Hellebuck being this, like, godsend and, like, world ender of a goaltender. But, like, he has good numbers, but I'm not sitting there being like, he is the reason that they have won 13 games this season. Without him, they'd be winless. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not the vibe I get from Connor Hellebuck. And I think as the years have gone on, they haven't, like, he hasn't even gotten better. It's just kind of been the same thing going on. Now, they won their last game. So they're actually, the record of 13-10-5, they're actually 14-11-5. So since the head coaching change, they're 1-1. But Connor Hellebuck this season, 24 games started, 269 goals against, 916 save percentage, 11-9-4, one shutout on the year. Like, it's good, but he's not, it's not a world beater in net. And like, going back to his career stats, I just want to go through his numbers here and just, this is what I mean. Like, he had his one season where he had a 924 goals against and a 236 save percentage. That was the year that he had a career high 44 wins. He only had 11 losses, right? He had six shutouts. That was the year where people were like, this dude's the MVP. Since then, the year after that, 913 save percentage, 2.9 goals against. And the next year, 922 save percentage. It's really good. And then 257 goals against, which is, it's good. And he was 31-21-5, which is, it's solid. It's not spectacular. Last year, 916 save percentage, 258 goals against. This year, 916 save percentage, 269 goals against. These aren't world beater numbers. He's good, but he's not lighting the world on fire. Like, I'm not looking up in the stat sheet right now going, oh my God, give this guy the MVP. He's the greatest thing the NHL has ever found in goal. It's not. When I go to the goalies, who do I see at the top? Andre Vasilevsky, who leads the league in wins. I see Frederik Andersen, who's like top five in almost every category. I see Jack Campbell, who it's only 1 year, but it's his first year as a legitimate starter, and he's playing very well. I'm seeing Jacob Markstrom, who is putting up phenomenal numbers on a team that normally has underachieved, and now their goaltender's playing really well, so they're playing better. You know, I'm seeing Thatcher Demko, who almost has a 920 save percentage, starting 25 games and lately has been on a 6-game win streak, putting this team on his back and giving up no more than 3 goals in every one of his team's victories since. Am I saying those guys are better? No, I'm just saying they're all having better numbers and they're all having better seasons and they're not considered better goalies. You know what I mean? Maybe Vasilevsky, but every other name that I mentioned, would you be sitting there right now being like, oh yeah, no, Hellebuck's better goalie. Right, but he's worse numbers than all of them. I've said this for a while. I think Jacob Markstrom's better goalie. I would even think Ilya Samsonov could be a better goaltender. John Gibson has played on just a god-awful team for Lord knows how long, but I think he's up there. I think Juuse Saros has continued what he did last year, and his numbers are better. I think Freddie Anderson's finally playing in front of a team that's not killing him in terms of stats, and he's got a 1.93 goals against and a 9.30 save percentage. Now, maybe the coaching change wakes him up a little bit too. Maybe this is a good thing for the Jets. Maybe it doesn't have an effect at all. But the 2 games in, they had a little bit of a break. Blake Wheeler is unfortunately on LTIR. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Paul Maurice knew it was the right time to leave. We'll see if it makes a difference or not. Now, a team that a coaching change has made the difference for, Vancouver Canucks.
The effects of that shot block. The guys always go palm first. Well, that one hit him in the knuckles. He had the palm out on his left hand and hit him in his right hand. And pinched the hand against his stick.
A 6-0-0 record since the Vancouver Canucks moved on from Travis Green, their former head coach and general manager Jim Benning. Life in Vancouver is pretty good. Bruce Boudreau, 6-0. They were 8-15-2 before the change. They're now right in the thick of things. Players are enjoying it. They had one of the worst special teams prior to the change. they were on a historically bad rate in terms of penalty kill. They were killing penalties at a 64.6% rate, which is one of the worst in the history that the stat had been tracked. They're operating at 83.3% since. Is Bruce Boudreau like a hard-nosed coach? Does he demand a lot from his players? Does he have this unbelievable system and schematic mindset that automatically flips and changes the team? No, this is what the captain, Bo Horvat, said about both Bruce Boudreau and the new general manager, by the way, Jim Rutherford, was announced to step in for Jim Benning. He said, quote, "They listen to what we have to say and are willing to change things or do things to help us not only off the ice, but on the ice as well." They listen. It's like in every relationship. When you see a couple, they just work well together, and you sit and you watch them. You don't know them well enough, but you're just sitting there like, God, they just really like get one another. It's probably because they talk. They tell each other things. Tell each other when things are good, when things are bad. They tell each other when things are bothering them. Tell them about positive things that happen during the day. Was that all that was missing in Vancouver? Because I remember I wrote a piece. I'm like, they shouldn't be this bad. It makes no sense. Like when people talked about playoff aspirations for Vancouver at the beginning of the year, it's easy to sit back when they're 8-15-2 and be like, wow, Kyle, you're an idiot. But like, let me go through their lineup for a second. You had JT Miller with Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser. It's a really good number one line. Then you had Bo Horvat, your captain, who is also coming into his own, who has had 50 plus point seasons before. Connor Garland, who is a young stud, who's now going to fill in on the wing and fill their top six. And then you've got second year guy, another Nils Höglander, who was on his way to having an even more productive year this year. You had Tanner Pearson, who's a 20 goal scorer before. You had this rookie, Vasily Podkolzin, who is apparently this stud they drafted a couple years ago. They went out and they traded for a legitimate third line center in Jason Dickinson. You've got other young guys who can help fill into the roster. You know, it made sense. And then they also, part of the trade with Connor Garland was getting all of Reckman Larson. They moved out Nate Schmidt, who is a disaster there. You got Quinn Hughes signed. You have Tyler Myers. You brought Travis Hamonic back. You've got Tucker Poolman. They signed Luke Shen for depth. Like, you had pieces there. That's the thing. They had bodies and they had a legit top six NHL defense corps. And at least a top four that maybe you wouldn't necessarily, like, there are other better options out there, but they've played big minutes before. They're not used to it. It didn't make any sense for them to be this bad early in the season. Then a coaching change happened, and you bring in a guy who's a little bit better offensively minded, the Travis Green and Bruce Boudreau. I mean, look at the teams he's coached. Washington Capitals, they finished first place in their division every single year he was their head coach. The one year they didn't was the year he got fired. And by the way, he got fired from Washington that year. I believe it was 2012. They had a winning record when he got fired. I think they were like 13-9-2, something along those lines. I also wrote a piece on this on the Hockey Writers about Bruce Boudreau, but why he was such a great fit. Then he goes to Anaheim. Well, Anaheim goes to a conference finals and they finished, checks notes, no worse than first in their division every single year he coached that team. Then he goes to Minnesota for a few years and no, they don't finish first, but they made the playoffs twice. With the lack of offensive weapons that at the time Minnesota did, they did not have Kirill Kaprizov. But they were back-to-back playoff teams. He'd won his division 8 times between both Washington and Anaheim. 8 times. He's gotten to work with Alex Ovechkin, Nicholas Backstrom, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Mike Green, John Carlson. Then you've got Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, Ryan Kesler. He's worked with talent before. He knows what to do to find those positions for those players to succeed in. You've got Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and Bo Horvat, Connor Garland, JT Miller. You got weapons on this team. Bruce Brujo knows how to utilize them. And also, he's not a snob when it comes to defense. He knows how to coach defensively. He's just better at offense. And it goes to show by the fact that since December 6th, they're killing penalties at an 83.3% clip. And it wasn't big schematic changes. It wasn't these impressive, you know, systems that he's put in place. Bruce Brujo is known as more of a laid back kind of guy who kind of goes with the strengths of his players. And when you've got offensive skilled players, you lean into that. But no, it wasn't even any of that. What was it? Bo Horvat said, quote, "They listen to what we have to say and are willing to change." That's it. Hey, Elias Pettersson, you're a superstar youngster in the making. What do you need to make things easier for you to be a better player for me so that we both look good? Awesome. Here you go. Hey, Bo Horvat, you're the captain of this team. What do you think needs to change around here? What do you think we need to do to get better at this? Oh, that's it? Okay, here you go. Sometimes all it comes down to is listening and being like, yeah, sure, let's try that. That's the other benefit. Bruce Brujo walks in there. He's got no clout with anybody. He has no ego to maintain. He's the new guy. Hey, what do you guys want to do? Oh yeah? Let's do that. 6-0. It's all it takes. Listening, change to what the players want. 6-0. They're not last place in the division anymore. They're a point behind the Sharks. They're 3 points behind the Kings. Amazingly enough, they're just 6 points behind the absolute juggernaut Oilers and 6 points behind the best Canadian team in that division, Calgary Flames. 6 points. That's 3 wins. They were in a much worse position 6 games ago. 6 games ago, they had 18 points total. Now they're at 30. Now they're a point behind the Sharks. They were a point away from being 500. It is amazing what a little listening, communication, and change can do. Bruce, there it is right. They are going in, and their next game is on the 27th against, well, would you look at that, the last place Seattle Kraken. We'll see if they make it 7. Before I get into my next segment, I want to talk about this guy, but I do quickly want to bring up, so the World Junior Hockey Championships are looking like they're still going to be happening in Edmonton. Team was announced, players including the 16-year-old phenom Connor Bedard, who's draft eligible, not this year, but next year. Dylan Guenther, who was part of that trade between the Vancouver Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes. You've got Mason McTavish, who's a big name from Anaheim. Jake Neighbors, who's one of the assistant captains. Cole Perfetti is the other assistant captain. He's from Winnipeg. Shane Wright, who's draft eligible this season, who a lot of people think is going to be first overall. Caden Goulet, who is the captain, who was drafted by the Montreal Canadiens. Owen Power, who's a first overall pick from Buffalo. And, you know, your goaltenders include Dylan Garand from the Rangers. Of course, the Rangers have another goaltender from Kamloops. Sebastian Kossa from the Detroit Red Wings. Brett Brochu, who's draft eligible this year. And I go on and on, and we're going to get a good opportunity to see all these players, and Canada has a really good chance of winning gold again. That's if the tournament goes on. I haven't read anything yet, but it does look like things will be happening. And I said this on my post last week. I did about a 5-minute video just talking about, you know, not able to do it. And I gave some congratulations and some things we're going to talk about here that I'm going to go into more detail. And I won't spend too much time on this because, you know, I talked about it a little bit more. But there's one player that's not going to be on this team that I wholeheartedly believe you need to find a way to put on that roster. You won't know this name unless you're in the London area or a fan of the Nashville Predators. But Luke Evangelista is a player that's not going to be there. And for those of you who don't know who Luke Evangelista is, he's the captain of the London Knights. He is 19 years of age, which generally during this tournament, you want as many 19-year-olds as possible. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, they have more experience. They just fit better. On top of that, you want players who have some diversity within the lineup, who can move around, who are flexible, who can do things that normally other players can't do. Luke Evangelista leads the London Knights right now in goals with 21. He's done that in 21 games. He's nearly a 2 point per game player, averaging 1.9 points per game. He can take faceoffs. He can quarterback a power play. He also plays penalty kill. He can play on the wing. I don't know what the process is into figuring out which players are going to make the roster. But I find it baffling how a player who is right now atop the OHL leaderboard in terms of goals and points, who's the captain of one of the most successful OHL franchises ever, who not only plays power play, plays penalty kill, can take face-offs, and is a born leader, and is a 19-year-old and will be one of the older players on your team. I'm finding it incredibly difficult to believe how a player like that doesn't find a way onto a roster. Because what? He's a third-round pick. He's not a first-round pick. Now, I'm willing to bet a lot of things. And there's some things, and I don't know enough about, you know, scouting or development or anything like that. But I watched the kid who got drafted in the first round by the London Knights go his entire rookie season without scoring a goal. And then his following season, he followed that up with a 20-goal campaign and earned himself a third-round selection from the Nashville Predators. And then there was COVID, and they didn't play for an entire year. And he has grown into a mature leader who has taken the reins of this team and absolutely catapulted them to being a top 10 team in the CHL, who has more shorthanded goals than any player this year in the CHL, who might lead the CHL in goals when this season is done. How you don't find a spot for that guy on the roster? Because I'm looking up and down this lineup and I'm seeing a lot of skill. I'm seeing a lot of talent. And don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from any of the players that are on this team right now, because we're all going to be cheering for Canada come December 26th. But I'm assuming Connor Bedard, who right now is an extra player on this team, or Shane Wright, who's probably going to be, I don't know, somewhere in the bottom six, maybe. Maybe not. But whatever their lineups are for the bottom six, they're probably, what, top-end players? Maybe I'm wrong. I've only seen one roster, one lineup sheet come out. I think Connor Bedard was the extra. You think it makes more sense to take a player, and I'm not saying it's Bedard, it could be anybody, but who's going to be an extra or a player who's going to play in your bottom six, who doesn't kill penalties on a regular basis, who can't score shorthanded goals or make something out of nothing or take faceoffs or play defense in the final minutes of a game? You know who can do that? Luke Evangelista. Am I a London homer? You're damn right I am. But I benefit from living in an area where I get to watch this kid play on a nightly basis. Who I get to watch highlight reels of him. Who I've talked to. who I talk to not in a game setting, to see how his mannerisms are outside of the arena, to see how he is with his teammates. Canada still might win gold. And that's kind of the best part about being, a scout and one of the individuals who gets to pick the players, is that normally you're even if you get a pick or a player or two wrong, your team still ends up winning, which is a nice luxury to have. But it takes away from an opportunity from the world seeing a player like this. You want to know whose name no one knew before the World Junior Hockey Championships and is now playing regular minutes with the Washington Capitals? Connor McMichael. The year, by the way, he went to the World Junior Hockey Championships, he led the OHL in goals, was the co-captain of the team, was a late first-round pick, played in their bottom six, killed penalties, and was a member of the London Knights. I still think the kid's going to be just fine, but it's a real shame that a lot of y'all aren't going to get a chance to watch this kid. But if I'm making it sound like he is this unbelievable, phenomenal player, and you've got to go run and look him up right now, it's not by accident. And it's a shame that he's not going to get a chance to play and showcase how dominant he is, because I bet he would have taken any role with grace and proven to be a guy who you can put in any situation and that benefits your team. He is head over heels the best player in London, and he's one of the best players in the Ontario Hockey League. And for him not to be a part of this tournament is kind of a travesty, because we're going to watch these games come the 26th, and there will be at least half the players on the team that I look at and go, Luke Evangelista is better than them. And it's just the way it is. And it'll be, you'll look at the end of the year in terms of OHL stats, and Luke Evangelista is going to be in the top five at both goals and points, captain, shorthanded goals. And London's got another really good chance to make a deep run at it. Their goaltender, by the way, Brett Brochu, is on this team. He probably won't play a game, but he is an absolute workhorse in net, who I'm also a little disappointed that we're not going to get a chance to see too, because that kid has battled from undrafted to, he should get drafted this year, to a guy that's going to battle, all because he's not 6'4". And who knows, you might see him. You know, Canada's goaltending is always kind of a mess at the beginning. Guys get pulled within the first two games pretty regularly. So maybe we see him. But anyways, that's my two cents on the team. I think Canada's still going to be an absolute dominant presence, and they should continue to vie for a gold medal. Now, this happened almost 2 weeks ago now, but I still think it needs to be mentioned, and that is Marc-Andre Fleury putting himself into the record books.
And listen to the crowd. Fleury, they're chanting. Fleury, Fleury, it sounds like. Here's a loose puck for Kane. The clock winds down. Fleury, Fleury is the chant from the home side for the French-Canadian netminder, who picks up his 500th career win, his 69th shutout. The active shutout leader, only two goalies in the history of the league have had as many victories as this. And look at the joyous bunch of teammates who he's only known for a couple of months. Look at that, it's beautiful. That's awesome.
With that win and shutout against the Montreal Canadiens, Marc-Andre Fleury earned himself his 500th career victory in the National Hockey League. There are only two goaltenders who have won more games than Marc-Andre Fleury. That is Patrick Waugh with 551, and that is Martin Brodeur with 691. By the way, he did that on the road in Montreal, where he is a native of from the Quebec area, and he does it doing a shutout. I believe that was his 68th shutout of all time. Fourth is Roberto Luongo with 489 at Belfour, in fifth with 484. You know, this was a guy who has had a roller coaster of a career. You know, gets a showcase at the World Junior Hockey Championships, wears the beautiful yellow pads, is a first overall pick from the Pittsburgh Penguins, who at the time were just horrendous, but they go on a bit of a lottery luck. They get Fleury, they get Malkin, and they get Crosby in like a 3-year span, and their dynasty begins. And he wins a Stanley Cup with Pittsburgh. He then is in a battle with a guy by the name of Matt Murray, who is currently not even playing games, who I knew was going to happen, but we're not going to talk about that. Matt Murray, who goes on to start the next 2 years in Pittsburgh and basically supplants Marc-Andre Fleury. He gets taken in the expansion draft by the Vegas Golden Knights, only to take them to the Stanley Cup Finals and just lose out to the Washington Capitals. And things are going great there. And all of a sudden, Vegas trades for Robin Lehner, who then starts starting games in the playoffs instead of him. And then he gets dealt to the Chicago Blackhawks, who at the beginning of the season are just a tire fire. And he starts getting it together, and they start winning a couple games here and there. And he's the most beloved player who can't stay in one franchise. It blows me away how you don't do everything in your power for a guy like that, who is from teammates. And we're talking like, if you watch footage from the road to the Winter Classic with the Capitals and Penguins, about Marc-Andre Fleury being the most likable player on that team, to chirping everybody, to being the most respected player with his opponents. He then goes from Pittsburgh to Vegas, and it's only the same things being said about him, saying he's one of the best, if not the best, teammates that they have ever had. And then he goes to Chicago, and they've known him for a grand total of like 2 weeks. And the entire team is just losing it around him because he has put himself in the record books with Martin Brodeur and Patrick Waugh. Those are the names. By the way, you want to hear something funny? The winningest goaltenders of all time, all five of them, Canadian. Brodeur, Waugh, Fleury, Luongo, Belfour. They're all Canadian. It is pretty mesmerizing to see. I think it's kind of like poetic justice for Fleury to have done it in Montreal. The only other place for him to have done it that would have been poetic justice, in my opinion, would have been Pittsburgh or Vegas, just because of how quickly the turnaround time went. But I think Pittsburgh would have been very poetic. But to do it in front of Montreal, in front of his home fans, and to do it on a shutout too, is that much more amazing. Congratulations to Marc-Andre Fleury, win number 500. And he might be sitting second all time when his career is said and done, ahead of Patrick Waugh, depending on what he wants for his career. There were thoughts of him contemplating retirement before going to Chicago or not playing, but we'll kind of see the way things turn out. But it looks like he's got a lot more hockey left to play and wants another crack at winning a Stanley Cup. So he's done it all. He's Stanley Cup champion. He has won a Olympic gold, not necessarily as the starting goaltender. I believe he was the third goaltender in 2010. Could be wrong on that. But nevertheless, big congratulations out to Fleury. Win 500. Only two other guys in the history of the NHL have more wins than him. So really, really impressive stuff. And then last thing I want to talk about here, because of course we've got to, involving the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, one player who really, since basically signing his contract, has been nothing short of spectacular and almost making it his mission to live up to the deal. And a lot of times when a guy signs a contract, they tend to try too hard to play like the player that they're being paid to be, when oftentimes the reason that you're paying a player that money is to continue to be that same player. Toronto's actually gotten very lucky in those regards in paying their players. I mean, you think about it, William Nylander. People think his contract is now a steal. 2 years ago, everyone thought it was a ripoff. Auston Matthews, despite making $11.6 million, is one of the best goal scorers in the league currently today, and will be for the next probably 5 to 10 years. And even $11.6 million, people are like, yeah, he's worth it. Say what you want about John Tavares, but captain material, one of the best faceoff guys, and will probably score 35 to 40 goals this year. It's $11 million, baby. But man, you saw the effect when he was not on this team last year in the playoffs. When he got hurt, you miss a guy like that. Morgan Rielly, who signed his 8-year, $60 million deal. It's like $7.5 million a year. So far this season is continuing to be the player that Toronto is paying him to be. Not just offensively, but defensively, he has been a lot more well-rounded in his defensive zone. He is killing more penalties than he has ever killed, and he is embracing the all-around number one defenseman role that Toronto is looking for him to become. He also has 26 points in 30 games. He's in the prime of his career at 27 and will be paid up until basically he's 35, 36. Now, here's the difference between his contract and a guy like, I don't know, Seth Jones. Seth Jones signed a 7-year deal or 8-year deal, which is $9.5 million or $9 million in Chicago. He's going to get paid that till about the same age, 35, 36. But at that point in his career, it'll be $9.5 million. In Toronto, it's $7.5 million. $7.5 million in 8 years or 7 years is not going to be that much money on the cap. It just isn't. The cap at some point will start going up. The percentage of that money against the cap is going to be significantly less. And the deal is going to be looking way better. Now, it's not ideal, and it'll probably look its best in the early stages and then kind of taper off a little bit. But this is what you wanted. This is the guy that you wanted when the contract got signed. He took less money to stay here. He took the extra year to stay here. You know, maybe those last 2 years aren't going to be the greatest, but 7.5 is a lot easier of a pill to swallow than, let's say, $8.5 or $9 million, which, let's be honest, he hits the open market, he probably gets close to that. Maybe not 9, but 8.5, absolutely. For a 7-year deal and a team that needs a defenseman like that, you don't think that Edmonton would clear some money out to go get Morgan Rielly, basically just bringing in every fan favorite Leaf onto that team. Go get Chris Russell off your team. Go get a couple other guys off. Mikko Koskinen's deal comes off. Mike Smith's money comes off, and bam, you've got your Morgan Rielly with your Zach Hyman and your Cody Ceci, and then bring another Leaf in for fun too. But you know, he has kind of been hit and miss with the franchise for the better part of his career so far. Fifth overall pick. He's looking like one of the better players coming out of that draft. I believe 2012 was the year. 2012 or 2013. Fifth overall. It was when Brian Burke was the general manager. He said he was the best player in the draft. Kind of looking like it, because that was like the Nail Yakupov, Alex Galchenyuk draft. And all he has done is just continue to... He has been through heartache, 2013, 2016, 2017, playoff losses, and God knows what. And despite all that, he wanted to stay and take less money and call Toronto home and be the well-rounded number one defenseman that the fans wanted him to be and the team wanted him to be. And he's embraced it, and he's taken it personally. 26 points in 30 games. It's fourth in the NHL among defensemen. And he's a point per game player since signing the deal. 22 points in 22 games. You can't ask for much more from a guy who took less money and said, I basically want to retire a Leaf. And that's what he's doing. He signed here till he is 35 years old. 602 games for Toronto. He'll play 1,000 before his year is done, before his contract is done, and hopefully many more. And maybe even add some hardware to the trophy case when everything's set in stone and looking back on it. Couple other things here before we get to Detroit Red Wings. A couple weeks ago signed Robbie Fabry to a 3-year extension with an AAV of $4 million. He had 8 goals and 6 assists in 28 games at the time. He was averaging close to 17 minutes too. He's got some okay underlying numbers, but you know, he's a younger-ish player. He gets a 3-year deal at a decent cap hit. Be one of the veteran players with Lucas Raymond and Mort Sider on that team and kind of building from the core up now, and looks like he's going to be part of that for at least the next 3 years. Winnipeg Jets placing captain Blake Wheeler on LTIR. 35-year-old hasn't played since suffering a leg injury back on December 10th versus Vancouver. He was kind of coming along with the team. I believe he had a, you know, was kind of upping his point total as well. Wasn't scoring a ton of goals, but you know, the captain of this team had been around the block with them, and a big, big body to miss and a big role to fill for this team. Also another reason, by the way, why maybe Winnipeg isn't doing necessarily as well as, you know, as they had hoped, is their captain hasn't been there for the last 10 days, week and a half. So going to be tough sledding for this team without Blake Wheeler for the time being. But at the time, he only has 1 goal in the season, but 17 points in 22 games. But at the time, head coach Paul Maurice saying he's going to be out, quote, a while. No time frame, just a while. Vancouver Canucks president and interim general manager Jim Rutherford continued to fill the front office, making Stan Smith, who is now was already with the organization to begin with, but making him vice president of hockey operations. He actually played for the team back in 78 and 91. He worked closely with Rutherford on hockey operation matters, including player and personnel decisions with the team. And they know each other very well. And a guy who at the time was kind of part of the team to begin with, but officially made the vice president of hockey operations. Congratulations to him. And then lastly here, Ben Bishop is hanging up the pads forever after an 11-year career due to a knee injury. Dallas Stars on Saturday that he was hanging up the pads for good. The last game he played was March 10, 2020, if you remember that. And then he played 3 games in the bubble in 2020 back in August. His numbers were not great. He tried to play an AHL game. I think he gave up like 8 goals on 33 or 34 shots, and just the knee was bugging him again. And you know what's funny? I go back to where his injury problems really started. If you remember when he played for the Tampa Bay Lightning against the Chicago Blackhawks, I think it was 2017 or 2018. I think it was 2017. It was Tampa, Chicago. Ben Bishop was in net and he was playing hurt and you could tell. And he was still a superb goaltender, but he couldn't move. And I think that was groin. I don't know if it was near groin at the time, but I don't think he's ever really been the same since. And then, especially the last couple of years of his career, he's never been able to stay healthy. They've always had to find a second goaltender for him. And unfortunately, the last 3 games in the bubble in August, where it was between him and Anton Khudobin, which sucks because that was the year that Dallas went all the way to the finals, where like a healthy Ben Bishop might have given them a better shot to go out and win. But you know, he was a guy who at the time was one of the most dominant and best goaltenders in the league. And just due to injuries, he's also like 6'7", and it's tough on your knees. It's tough on your knees as a goaltender at 6 feet, let alone 6'7". And just couldn't hold up anymore. So congratulations to Ben Bishop on an incredible career. Stanley Cup Finals appearance, made his mark early, kind of made his way on the scene in Ottawa, goes over to Tampa, comes one of the best goalies, goes to Dallas, has that for a couple of years, and then unfortunately is not able to finish it out afterwards. But amazing career and 11 years in the NHL. It's big. All right, that about does it today. Throat's getting a little dry, so I'm going to call it at that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being patient, allowing me to take a couple of weeks and be back here with another episode. Follow me along on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, Instagram, and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. More articles coming out for the hockey writers about the Canucks. Going to see what I can write about them in the next little bit with no games going on, but hopefully the next time we're doing this podcast, games are going to be back playing. Players are less likely to end up on the COVID list, and we can put this little variant of Omicron or whatever you call it in the past and be looking ahead to the future. That is it. Enjoy the rest of the week. I'll see you next Tuesday. Until then, that's a wrap.